Would you pray with me? Lord, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of each of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. Well, this is one of my absolute favorite New Testament stories. It's kind of like a bit of a horror story if you imagine this guy, if you really let yourself fall into the text and what's going on with him. It really stands uniquely in our Bible as a one of a kind. And we see Jesus march right into it with no fear, nothing but confidence, bringing nothing but hope. And I just absolutely love the story. I look forward to it every time I get a chance to teach it or preach it or whatever, which gave me a good week today getting ready for this. So I thank you for the opportunity again. We pick this up, and in the beginning of the story, of course, we hear that Jesus is just coming to the other side of the sea. It gets sort of picked up in the middle. You know, they came to the other side of the sea, and we're going, okay. So that means that we need to talk a bit about where had he been? What had they been doing? Let's get this, you know, stage set for this thing. Where is this other side of the sea? So we'll spend a few minutes this morning getting our feet on the ground with that, and then we'll talk about what goes on here. But Jesus has been traveling the length and the breadth of Israel. He's been all over the country, and he's been out of the country. He's been in Samaria, and again, we're going to find him out of the country today. But he's been all over Israel, and he's been gathering his people together through his ministry. He's been teaching, for instance, the Sermon on the Mount. Okay, he's been feeding them. There's the 4,000. There's the 5,000. He's been creating fellowship. He's had meals at Levi's house. He's had meals with Zacchaeus. He's been at Martha and Mary and Lazarus's. He's been everywhere, extending the hand of hospitality, extending his love, making his presence felt. He's been at worship. He's been in the synagogues. He's been by the lake shores creating sermons. And you know what the good news is? The good news is he's still at it. The good news is he's still at it. The risen Christ, he's here. He's here right now. He's here whenever we gather at this table. Whenever two or more come together to raise his name in praise and honor. He's here. He's here with us. It's our great joy to share Jesus with one another in this community of faith. And it's an even greater joy, says Jesus, to share him with those outside this particular community. We find relief together, don't we? We come here, we can breathe a sigh of relief. We've been talking about belonging. We know what that feels like. We're safe here. We're amongst friends. We're with family. We can find this relief because the world is an alien and isolating place, isn't it? It seems it becomes more so almost every day. More and more people are coming into the office saying, I don't know what's going on out there. I've never seen anything like this before. Why is there all this hate? Why is there all this violence? Why are there all these shootings? Why is there so much unrest? It's a troubling world. The temptation, I think, becomes for us to ghettoize ourselves, to withdraw into the presence of our friends where it's safe, to keep to ourselves because it is so rough out there. We don't have to be afraid here. We don't have to be anybody else here. We don't have to worry about whether our faith is something we should or shouldn't discuss. But Jesus shows us this morning something really important. He shows us that we are not to succumb to those pressures. And he shows it by himself stepping purposefully into this nightmarish situation with this wild man ranting and raving on the mountains amongst the tombs. He's really a sort of a Rod Serling kind of individual. Pretty scary. So the text begins. They came to the other side of the sea. So let's talk about where that is. Let's talk about you see the sea there in the center, right? So they came to the other side. Israel is on to our the left side of that from us, right? That would be the west side. The Decapolis is on the right side. We'll get to this in a minute. But on the left, where Israel is the side of all of the Jews, all of Jesus' brothers and sisters. On the right side, though, that's all foreign land. That's all pagan territory. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But here's the real deal. They had to cross the sea. They had to cross the sea to get to it. That's its own obstacle, you see. The distance across the sea to an Israelite is just as metaphysical a barrier as a physical one. They're desert dwellers. They're terrified of water. They don't know how to swim. Their friends who are fishermen who get caught in storms drown. The sea is a deadly, deadly place for them. It's a place of chaos. It's a place of disorder. And metaphysically to them, spiritually to them, it's a place of not being. The ground is where we be. The sea is where we are not. Who knows what's under that water? So it's a scary place. But it doesn't slow Jesus and the disciples down because he said they came to the other side of the sea. They're going to some lengths, you see, to go visit, to spread the word. Now, this is the country where they're going, the country of the Gerasenes. And there you go. You see that bright kind of yellowish color? It says Decapolis in there, right? That's the area where they are. All of that, the purple, all of those colors, that's where they are. That's the country of the Gerasenes. They're pagans. They're not Israelites. They're not from the tribe, as it were. They're, in fact, profoundly pagan. They're largely constituted of retired Roman soldiers. So Jesus goes to this place where his people are not. He goes across this place where people are not. That's the sea, and he gets to the place where his people are not. We're at some distance now. And there Jesus meets this man, this interesting man, who is possessed by an unclean spirit. He's living amongst unclean tombs. He's surrounded by a people employed in unclean occupations. You heard that those demons get sent into pigs. Pigs are, from a Hebrew standpoint, are the ultimate in unclean. Can't be eaten, can't be kept, can't be touched. But they're there, 2,000 of them. Then they're all in this unclean Gentile territory. And nonetheless, Jesus goes there, and we need to ask ourselves, why is that? So he's crossed the sea, and he's there. Fascinating. Utterly fascinating. Mark wants us to understand, you see, that we're definitely not in Kansas anymore, Toto. This ain't home. This is a place where no one would want to go, let me correct myself, where no Hebrew would want to go for any reason whatsoever. Contrary to all sense and expectation, however, Jesus goes out of his way to get there. He gets in a boat and crosses the sea. He's intent, you see. Why? Why, we have to ask ourselves. And that's the question for this morning. Why does Jesus go out of his way? Let's see what we can come up with. Why does he do it? Because that's precisely where the need is the greatest, you see. He knows. He knows that they don't know the God of Israel. They don't know the living God. All they know are their little pagan gods, the little idols that they have worshipped. Jesus is going to change their reality. Jesus is going to bring them hope of something greater. Jesus lands, gets out of the boat, and immediately he's confronted by this incoherent and self-destructive wild man. You have to picture this guy in rags and bits of skin and half naked, and he's got chains hanging off of him. He's tormented. He's screaming. He's yelling day and night, it says, amongst the tombs. He's living in one of those caves occupied by somebody's corpse. He can't be constrained by shackles and chains, but he's held captive by his demons. What does that tell us about the power of demons? The man can break chains, but he can't free himself from demons. Now, we need to understand this biblical concept of demons. They had no real scientific basis for understanding mental health, right? So anything that took you out of your sort of normal self was seen as the work of demons. What you and I would call mental illness? Demons. Demons. This man's tormented. And the demons have stripped him of every shred of his humanity. And we've seen that, haven't we? If we haven't been to somewhere where the mentally ill are locked up, we've certainly seen them in TV and movies and that sort of thing. Anybody ever read One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest? These demons are so powerful that they've stolen his voice. Can't talk. Can only scream. They're so numerous that their name is Legion. A Roman legion is a cadre of soldiers, often 1,000. So they're so numerous that their name is Legion. They're like a character from a bad horror film. Think about that. Night and day, the text says, among the tombs and on the mountains, he was always howling and bruising himself with stones. This guy's in a bad way. Those demons are tormenting him. But I want to tell you, that's why I made the connection to mental illness. He's not a fiction. He's not a phantom of some sort. That's just not the case. Some of our own alien territories, some of our own pagan places, our jails, our wards, our homeless shelters are full of such people. Think about the homeless. Why are they on the streets? Not because they're particularly well adjusted, let's put it that way. If you spend time in a homeless shelter, you'll see this and you'll see it clearly. So we have our own wild men who may not be constrained by chains, but they are indeed constrained by their demons. But let's be honest. Let's be honest. In this post-COVID era in which we live, you and I, right? We don't have to look that far to see people in misery and pain and isolation. More and more press is being gathered about the after effects of COVID. More and more press is being gathered and printed about what people went through and how things will never be the same. And I can tell you as a pastor, it's true. I see it, I hear it, I encounter it every day. The after effects of two and a half years of isolation. Now there's another parallel here too. Outcast from the land of the living by his uncleanliness, this man now lives quite literally among the dead. That mountain would have been punctured by limestone caves, each cave a tomb, sometimes multiple tombs. It's where they buried their dead. It was the ultimate in unclean. The community no longer bothers to see the human being beneath the bizarre behavior. And we see that in our culture, don't we? Pass that homeless person under the overpass with the sign. Do we see them as a human being? Or do we see them as a social problem? Or do we not see them at all? Good question. So the community doesn't see the human being under this, but Jesus does. Jesus is not afraid. Jesus is not put off. In fact, it almost seems as if Jesus came all that way for this one man. He's the only character in the story until the very end, right? It's almost as if Jesus knew he was there, knew he was in need, and wanted to document and demonstrate for us the lengths he would go to recover any lost sheep. The power to prevail over demons resides within Jesus himself. We see that. We see that. He speaks and the demons are expelled. His work, you see, is his deed. His word is his deed. All he has to do is speak them and out they come. This word frees the man and sends the demons to their destruction in the sea. Perfect. The place of not being. It seems that the people are surprised when they hear. The reaction of the community is really interesting, I think. This gets a little lost underneath all the rest of the story. You see, they find the restored man quietly sitting at Jesus' feet, now in his quote-unquote right mind. I love that part of the text. They find him sitting there at the Savior's feet. And what do? Do they come and embrace Jesus? Do they thank him? Do they ask where his wondrous powers come from? Do they invite him into their homes? No. They beg him to leave. What is that about? Well, I'll tell you. It seems that he's interrupted the pattern of their lives, you see. They were used to what they had. The guy's out there in isolation. He's not really bothering them all that much. The pigs are out there with him. They're used to what they had. He's interrupted this pattern. Such has often been the response of the human heart to Jesus. If we've learned anything from the lost and loveless culture surrounding us, it's this. When Jesus steps into our everyday life, many, if not most, people ask him to leave. Why do you think religion and church attendance and all that stuff is spiraling downward in our country, in our community, in our world? It's people asking Jesus to leave. Here's what John says in the beginning of his gospel. He came to what was his own, and his own people did not accept him. That's what we have here in the story. And that's what we have here in America today. You realize, of course, that we are a small, small minority, growing smaller every day. Seems most of those local residents didn't want Jesus' message to change their lives. But one of them sure did. One of them sure did. Jesus set him free. Some of us here this morning can identify with that, the resistance to change. If I accept Jesus, if I embrace Jesus, if I answer Jesus' call, I'm going to have to change some things. Might have to work a different schedule, might have to give up golf, might have to do something I don't want to do, might have to go somewhere I don't want to go to, might have to talk to somebody I don't want to talk to, because that's what Jesus did and that's what Jesus wants. Think about that. Think about that. Where's your commitment in all this? On this 4th of July, perhaps more than ever, I think, as we celebrate the extraordinary freedoms we enjoy in this nation, we need to ask ourselves a question, and we need to ask it clearly, and we need to think it through. Are we in the process of sending away the only one who has the power to truly set us free? Are we turning our back on the one who offers real freedom? Freedom to release us from our demons and restore us to our right minds. This morning, Jesus shows us that ministry in his name is sometimes inconvenient. Frequently, it leads us into foreign territories that we don't particularly like, where we don't particularly want to go. Sometimes it means stretching our comfort zones and inviting strangers into our home. And thank you very much, because you did that Friday night. We invited strangers into our home, and we had a merry time, and we got to know some folks, And we got to share some goodwill and to extend hospitality. That's what Jesus wants. That's what Jesus calls us to do. That's why we did it. Often it means going out of our way to share our hope with perhaps just a single lost soul. I used to have a friend, still have the friend, lives in Michigan now, has for a long time, but he was here. He was an associate pastor here. It was a big part of my formative time in my faith. His name was Jim Reiser. If Jim ran into a homeless guy, and I saw this more than once, homeless guy, homeless woman, whatever, that was looking for money, Jim would stop what he was doing. I saw this actually happen. We exited a Denny's one morning, having had breakfast, three or four of us in a Bible study, and there was a homeless person outside. And Jim stopped and I walked by him, okay? Sorry to say, really sorry to say. I wouldn't do that now, but I did it then. Jim walked right up to him, talked to him for a few minutes, said, "What do you need?" The guy said, "Well, I just don't have any money. I need some money. I'm hungry." And Jim said, "Well, come on with me. I'll take you inside and I'll buy you breakfast." Now, Jim had just eaten breakfast, but he went in, sat down, and spent a meal with the guy. He paid for the guy's meal, chatted with him, talked to him, found out who he was, found out what he was all about, and extended Jesus to him through his own presence. That's discipleship. That's discipleship. And I will tell you, from that day, I wish I had done that. By such sharing, you see, is the kingdom of heaven built. That's how it happens. The restored demoniac, he wants to be with Jesus. He wants that more than anything, right? But Jesus tells him to stay and share. He says, "Go home to your friends and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and what mercy he has shown you. Share the good news," he's saying, "with those that won't come see me." Now, here's the thing. This is like the punchline to the story. This is so good. Here's the thing. That guy, the crazy guy, he must have been faithful. He must have been faithful to his charge. He must surely have done as he was asked, because the next time Jesus steps off a boat on the other side of the sea on the shores of the Decapolis in Mark 8, he'll be greeted by 4,000 of his friends who are eager for him to pony up a meal for him. It's different. It's different. They want to hear now what he has to say because they've seen what he can do in a human life. That's the sort of kingdom thing that happens when we go out of our way for Jesus. Let's do that. Let's do that here. Let's make a covenant amongst ourselves. Let's go out of our way for Jesus. Let's extend that hospitality. Let's expand the kingdom. Let's try it. Shall we? There's independence for you. There's freedom for us and for those to whom we extend it. Amen.